to him. What you do to him, you do to me.
How can you do that?
It's a gift, he said, smiling tightly. A gift from the stars. She reached out her hand and touched the fabric of Stoner's shirt. He felt her fingertips press against him.
You're solid, she whispered. You're real.
Stoner said, It's pretty much what you said to Bishop Craig earlier today. I'm an ordinary human being who has access to extraordinary technology.
But you said you've become more than human.
Stoner turned and stepped into the sitting room, Angelique following right behind him. He took one of the armchairs, she sat in the other. For several moments he was silent, wondering how much he should really tell her. You were closer to the truth than I was, he said at last. I'm a human being. I was born on Earth. I have access to technology that's far beyond present human capabilities, but there's no reason why humans couldn't learn to develop and use such technology.
But you said you were more than human.
He scratched at his beard, thinking of how he should reply to her. That was an exaggeration. You are more than the humans of the Middle Ages, aren't you? You live longer, you're healthier, you know far more than they did back then. You have access to much greater sources of energy. Angelique nodded uncertainly. Well, I know quite a bit more than anyone else on Earth. And I have access to much greater sources of energy. That's what I meant when I said I'm more than human.
You're shading the truth,
his wife accused inside his mind. I know, he replied, but she's frightened enough as it is.
I'm not sure that I entirely believe that,
Angelique said slowly.
See, said Joe. She's smarter than you think.
I could make her believe it, he said to her. I could manipulate her mind.
We agreed that we'd do that only if we absolutely have to.
Stoner nodded mentally. To Angelique, he said, You can believe as much or as little of it as you wish. Her eyes went crafty.
I'm not sure I believe any of it, she challenged.
Fine. But believe this. Unless you act, and act soon, the human race will destroy itself in a nuclear war. That's why I've got to see your Archbishop Overmeyer immediately.
You could just appear to him, as you just did to me.
I could, but I'd rather he was prepared to talk with me about the impending war. I don't want him half collapsing on me the way that Craig did. Angelique started to shake her head, but caught herself.
Can you really stop the war from happening?
No, Stoner said flatly. But you can, if you want to.
And that's why you've returned to Earth? Angelique asked, almost plaintively. To save us from this war?
Stoner hesitated. Yes. That and more.
What more?
I'll tell Overmeyer, and anyone he chooses to have with him when we meet.
Bishop Craig is trying to set up the meeting for you.
Tell him to hurry. Time's growing short. And Stoner blinked away. One instant he was sitting in the armchair in front of Angelique, solid, real, a living, breathing, speaking person. The next instant he was gone. She was staring at an empty chair, alone in the sitting room. Angelique drew in a deep, shuddering breath.
He's human, she told herself. He says he's human. He cares about what happens to us. He wants to save us.
Then she realized.
And he wants me to help him.
For many minutes, Angelique sat in the armchair, her mind turning thoughts over and over, hopes and fears and yearnings racing through her.
He wants me to help him, she repeated to herself. He wants me to help him.
Slowly, she picked up her shoulder bag and rummaged in it for another hypo spray gun. Then she got to her feet and stepped into the kitchenette where Tavalera was still sitting glassy-eyed. She pressed the hypo spray to Tavalera's bare arm and squeezed its trigger. He twitched, shuddered. Quickly, she rolled his sleeve back down. Before she could button the cuff, Tavalera stirred to consciousness.
Phew, he said a little groggily. I must have nodded off.
Angelique smiled sweetly for him.
The wine must be more potent than we thought. I fell asleep, too.
Tavalera looked embarrassed.
Guess I'm out of condition, far as alcohol's concerned.
Me too, she said. Glancing at her wristwatch, she put on an alarmed expression.
"Goodness! Look at the time! I've got to leave, Raoul."
He was still slightly fuddled from the drugs, but he walked her to the door. Somewhat reluctantly, Angelique thought. She gave him a peck on the cheek and left hurriedly. Tavalera stood by the door, never even thinking that it was open and he could walk out if he wanted to. Instead, he grumbled to himself, "Some friggin' date. I slept through it."
Chapter 13.
At the same time, Stoner was halfway across the world, speaking to the Iranian astronomer Karim Bakhtiar. He had contacted Bakhtiar because the man was the foremost astronomer in the Islamic world, a scientist whose secularist views had brought him into controversy more than once with the religious conservatives of the Light of Allah and their powerful followers. Moreover, Bakhtiar was also the brother of the chief of Greater Iran's Revolutionary Guard, and his older brother protected him, up to a point. Stoner had reached Bakhtiar through the perfectly prosaic telephone system, offering his credentials as an astrophysicist and asking for an hour or so to explain the strange phenomena of the aurora. The northern lights had flickered in the skies over the Middle East night after night, just as they had over all the rest of the northern hemisphere. Many faithful Muslims streamed to their mosques, fearing that the end of the world was at hand. Stoner knew that it could be true. It wasn't easy to manipulate Bakhtiar's mind over the telephone link, even with a video connection, but Stoner used the astronomer's natural curiosity to overcome his suspicious misgivings about a stranger, and an obvious American at that, who suddenly offers to explain a phenomenon that was puzzling the entire astronomical community. But Bakhtiar was an astronomer, and curiosity overcame his political caution. He invited Stoner to his office. "I can always call for the security police," he told himself, "if he turns out to be a fraud or a mental case." Bakhtiar's office was on the campus of the University of New Tehran, which was only lightly guarded by Iranian security forces, unless student unrest called out the riot police. At the moment, all was quiet, so it wasn't difficult for Stoner to project himself into a secluded corner of the campus by a small copse of acacia trees, then stroll leisurely to the astronomy building. In the lobby, a young security guard asked for Stoner's visitor's pass. He had none, but he held out his empty hand and assured the young man that it was all right to pass him through. The dark-skinned guard frowned momentarily and touched the butt of the pistol at his hip, but then he shrugged and let Stoner pass. As soon as he entered Bakhtiar's small, cluttered office, Stoner sensed the Pico cameras and microphones hidden in the walls and ceiling. He wondered if Bakhtiar himself knew that he was under constant surveillance. Stoner closed his eyes briefly, and the sensors obediently turned off. Karim Bakhtiar was a small, intense man with a closely clipped fringe of a beard that was just beginning to show touches of gray. He had learned over the years to curb his tongue when speaking to anyone except a fellow scientist. Even then, he was circumspect. Like the rest of the Islamic world, Greater Iran lived under the code of Sharia law. Although the Quran saw no conflict between science and faith, and indeed encouraged faithful Muslims to seek knowledge as a means of learning of the glories of Allah, the conservative mullahs who made up the ruling ulama regarded the constant searching of scientists with deep uneasiness. Astronomers were the least suspected. They studied the stars, not people, which was relatively harmless, as long as they did not contradict the revealed truth of Allah's creation of the world. Bakhtiar sat behind his desk, fairly radiating nervous energy. He wore a thoroughly Western business suit of dark blue with a vest tightly buttoned over his lean frame. His shirt was open at the neck. On the left breast of his jacket he had pinned a pair of discreet ribbons, like military decorations. The Order of the Faith, and the colors of the International Astronomical Federation. Here is a man who is walking a tightrope, Stoner thought. He immediately liked Bakhtiar. After inviting Stoner to sit in the rickety plastic chair before his desk, Bakhtiar said in slightly accented English, "I searched for your name in the astronomical databases." With a tight smile, Stoner said, "Try going back to the 1980s. Bakhtiar's brows rose.
That's more than a century ago. But he turned to the keyboard at his side,